Astonishing Legends Network.
The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library.
Do not come in here with wet paws like that before our guests arrive.
Madam, our guests have seen the wolf pup's footprints countless times. They won't even notice a set that's a little larger.
Mr. Darling, the wolf pup's prints are abnormally large, but yours are the size of dessert plates.
Yes, I'm rather proud of my big feet.
Oh, so you don't mind if our guests suspect that there's a giant wild beast loose in the library, making them less likely to wander off?
I'll call a maid with a wiper rug.
Oh, my. Please, everyone, take a moment to thoroughly dry your boots and drain your umbrellas, won't you please? We have several stands here in the foyer just for such instances. Like this. Yes. Oh, good evening, Paul. Yes, I am aware of the torrential downpours. There's flooding, too. I rather expected it, dear Paul, to be honest. How good it is to see you. I'll explain more once everyone's seated. The reading room will wait a moment, folks, so don't worry. There we are. Everyone seated? Everyone comfy? Everyone ready? Welcome to the Midnight Library, my dear guests. I am your not-so-soggy MC, Miranda Merrick. My. Aww, my poor dears. You all look as though you've just been dragged up from the deep. I cannot believe the amount of water that's been dumped down out of the heavens this night. Why, it's almost as though the powers that be are punishing you for coming here to hear about some totally fictional underwater beings. You know, I don't care what anyone says, the Fates have the worst sense of humor. Their irony is dead on, though. Our dear Paul has mentioned to me that because of this seemingly endless night of relentless rain, that there will be flooding. And I can confirm this. And Peril Pond shall triple in size and in depth, just as the prophecy predicted in the Book of Maria. The prophet wrote, "Many will meet the maidens and be drawn down to their death in the flooded forest." Excuse me. Never mind. Here we are. Along with the hospitality tray goodies, I've had Natasha bring up some warmed towels for you. Just say the word cat or dog to her, and she'll give you the appropriate towel that's been specially made here in-house for you to, dry off with. Do not take the towels home with you, though, as tempting as it may be. That would end poorly for you. Just toss them into the fireplace when you're finished with them, and we'll all enjoy the, aroma of them. Now, very quickly, the hospitality tray. I'm told that everything on this tray this evening is fish-flavored. Don't make that face. There's bottom feeder bread. On the second tier are tuna turnovers. Those little green things are bullfish in a blanket. And the swelled up lumps are pufferfish hot pockets. For the most daring of you, there's also blowfish biscuit bombs. So, choose wisely. I'd like to state up front, my lovelies, that if you've come here with your hopes high, that this evening will be filled with heartwarming stories akin to and the likes of The Little Mermaid, well, I'm afraid I'm about to dash your hopes on the jaggy rocks of disappointment and drag them far below to drown them for fun. I mean for good. Because tonight's reading is all about the more malicious make of half-fish females, the dark mermaids. We aim to present the counterculture of the catch of the day. You may not be able to see the placard from where you're sitting, but only a few tall shelves up near the Water Witches section. But after the Submerged Sorcerers, there's a little precious section called Murderous Mermaids. And there, the lore begins with the beautiful songstresses, the sirens of Greek mythology. Now, what you may be surprised to hear, that in the earliest writings, the sirens who lured untold numbers of sailors to their deaths were first described as alluring women with the bodies and heads of winged birds. These were referred to as harpies, and they intentionally flew near and landed upon the gallant ships and flew over the heads of the working crew and hypnotized the sailors with their spellbinding songs and gently coaxed them to the craggy jaggy rocks that would puncture and tear open the hulls of the ships, resulting in every man on board being drowned. Now that is fun in itself, but I'm sure you're wondering why? Why would they do this? Well, some writings say these creatures were directed to fulfill a curse set upon them by the goddess Demeter for failing to protect Persephone, her daughter, from being taken by the god Hades. A more intense theory is that these sirens were bent on punishing sailors for their rough treatment of women in general. A more romantic theory is that these sirens or harpies were searching for a hero amongst all of these mariners as potential lovers and husbands. But a more likely reason as to why the sirens, both the bird variety and later the fish-tailed variety, were dead set on destroying scads of seamen, was simply because, throughout history, supernatural beings were in the habit of doing as they darn well pleased, and they never ever felt obligated to explain their baffling actions to beings so simple as humans. I get it. Now, just in case you are unfamiliar with the ancient story, or if you happen to love it as I do, I thought I would just give a brief telling here of Odysseus and the Sirens. During the Trojan War, roughly 1,200 years before the Common Era, or more than 3,000 years ago, the triumphant warrior Odysseus set sail from Troy with a crew of men to make his way home to the island of Ithaca. His journey is perilous and fraught with dangers upon the high seas. He lands upon the beautiful island of Aia, the home of the enchantress or witch Circe. She is kind at first, then uses her powers to turn all of his men into pigs. Odysseus convinces her to return them to their human form and agrees to stay on the island with her for a year. Before he departs, she warns him of the treacherous island of Sirens, whose song no human man can resist, and if followed, will lead to their doom. She instructs him that he and his men should fill up their ears with wax so that they may withstand the alluring singing of the sirens and pass safely by them. Odysseus, being both curious and clever, decides that he will be the one man to hear the irresistible call of the siren's song and live to tell about it. Odysseus orders all of his crew to stop up their ears tightly with beeswax, but his own ears he leaves open. Then he directs his men to lash him to the mast of the ship to bind him securely there, so that he alone may hear the dreamy voices of the siren's song. He also commands them that no matter how much he begs them, they are not to untie him. When their ship approaches the foretold island, the captivating song of the sirens begins. Hearing it both delights and tortures Odysseus. The more he hears, the more mad he becomes. Following the beckoning music of these maidens is his sole desire. He begins calling out to his men, pleading with them to release him. When he thrashes about in a deranged attempt to free himself, his men, who are deaf to his wild beggings, were said to tie his binding ropes tighter. Odysseus and his crew then safely escaped the musical enchantment when their ship drifted out of earshot of the singing sirens. In later versions of this sweet story, the sirens are often likened to the more familiar mermaids. Tonight's reading in the Midnight Library is brought to you by the Evil Witches Yacht Club. Honestly, I don't know how they keep coercing us. There's a rumor, you know, in the village, due to loose lips prone to spillage. of sea hags below and mermaids that glow, looking for corpses to pillage. The yacht-clubbing witches can master a thundering cloudburst disaster. And before you know, underwater you go. Give in, breathe in, and drown faster. They say witches who sail the seas come inland and do as they please. Dry land gets flooded, and any red-blooded are snatched as they're grabbed by their knees. You'll see mermaids with hair all stringy. They'll tip you right out of your dinghy. You'll rot, but you'll grow, sludge and snails below, your cadaver a slime-covered thingy. My note here says the Evil Witches Yacht Club is still open to new members, and as enticement, they are hosting a meet and greet luncheon with Davy Jones. It just says, come to the unnamed inlet this next full moon, and you are to bring an open mind and a thirst for the unknown. How nice. Oh, and here's a little bit of small print that states that no paddle boards, flotation devices, or underwater breathing apparatuses will be permitted. That makes sense. And, and any who are aqua curious can still meet with Dolly at the dockhouse on any given Sunday. Just let me say here, my dear guest, that this is all the sweeter I will permit this reading to go. I thought we might ease into the dark mermaid lore, though. Just dip a toe in at first. With a kind of beginner mermaid from ancient Irish folklore. These fine fluidic creatures are referred to as the Mireaux. Underwater beings said to be most human-like, but have soft webbing between their fingers and fin-like feet. These females are said to be astonishingly beautiful and are known to appear to lonely sailors and fishermen, inviting them into the water to swim with them. Once enticed below, if the men are agreeable, the female Mireaux will cast an enchantment over them that gives them the ability to live, even though they have drowned, as their lovers and husbands. If the submerged men are not agreeable, well, neither are the Mireaux, and the men will then drown to their deaths. It is stated in the Irish tales that the male Mireaux are less than handsome, even coarse-looking or downright ugly, and that this may be the reason why the female Mireaux seek out human men as their husbands. You may like to know that there are actual Irish families that state in their histories and in the stories of their lineages that they are the descendants of the real offspring that were long ago couplings of human men who mated with the far below, Mireaux. Now, I wouldn't be doing my best by you, my beloved guest, if I were to let you escape exit, this damp evening, without filling your head full of watery dread, by telling you about one of the most merciless mermaids known to man. My dear visitor, let me tell you about the ruthless Russian mermaid, the Rusalka. Rusalkas aren't just any bare-breasted beauty whose bottom half is that of a large scaly fish. Rusalkas are the archaic Slavic creatures who are the angry ghosts of pretty young women who drowned before they were betrothed to a lover or before their wedding day. Residing in the deep, their sad, frustrated ghost becomes as the fish they dwell with, turning into wrathful, malicious mermaids whose one desire is to drown, well, whoever they set their sights on, with some books here referring to them as less as mermaid-like and more as vicious water demons. A popular Russian opera called Rusalka speaks of the demonic mermaid ghost as being so evil that it contains the very spirit of death and is known to go so far as to transform into the drifting and entrancing lights of the Will-o'-the-Wisp to entice those on land to follow them into swamps to drown them. The once human beauties, cheated out of their happy lives, grow pale and translucent in their watery depths. With long flowing green hair and glowing eyes, they gather on lonely beaches or in quiet inlets, singing and waving to whoever is near. Some, it is said, have become so gifted in their evil determination that they can appear to know the men, women, or even children they desire and can lure them by calling them by their name. When the confused and deceived person approaches them, the Rusalka immediately and savagely pounces on them and drags them down to their death. Excuse me. So, my lovelies. Irma! What is that? Oh, it's a soaked note from my grandma. Oh, just a moment, folks. Let's see here. Oh my. Storm surge, flooding, yada yada. Inundate, underwater torrents. Let's leave that part out. Yada yada, the unwanted, surfaced 3 days later. Got it. I'm so sorry, everyone. I don't know why my silly grandmother Maria sent Irma with this goofy note about her, upcoming fishing expedition plans. For me to read just now. I do apologize for the interruption. She means well. She's just older and obsessed with, fishing. Well, I would just toss this note into the fireplace, but, I know that it can't burn. Anyway, before I put you out, I just wanted to give you a few pointers for perhaps making it home, which I'm almost certain is very nearly possible. Follow the highest ground, if you find any, and not the will-o'-the-wisp, which is overly present, as you might guess. If you happen to have the ability to move through the treetops, do that. That might work out. Maybe. One thing I want to assure you of is that there is no truth to the prophecy about any underwater cave system that can be fallen into when it opens up in the dampened traversable paths, because that has never happened before. So there. Now, please allow Mr. Darling to turn you out with complete abandon. Good night, my dear guests. Good night. Are you coming to the Rampage River Feast, Mr. Darling? I thought you'd be interested in what's been trapped in the flood.
No, they always include a bog body to trick me.
Aw, tell you what, we'll trick them. You go as a regular wolf, and I'll pass you safe scraps under the table.
Aw, you'd do that for me?
Absolutely. If dogs are a man's best friend, then wolves are a witch's best friend.
I thought it was black cats.
Well, let's not split hairs and look a gift horse in the mouth, shall we?
One regular wolf coming right up.
Uh-huh. And now, spooky lovelies, I have for you a sample from the opening sequence of the story of Stefan Strangeways that's currently posted in our Patreon. Enjoy!
It's not that I don't believe you, madam. It's just so hard to understand the circumstances that would have to come about in order for this extraordinary thing to happen.
Well, all right. Let me start from the beginning so you have a complete picture. buckle up, darling. Teetering from side to side as she rolled forth from a thick gray cloud that sat heavily on the settling waves of the unnamed inlet, the valiant ship, the Mystique, arrived in ruins. Her main mast split clear down to the belly of the ship. Her prow had been hacked, and a full third of her sails ripped to ribbons. The journey had been glorious and hazardous for her entire crew and guests, both willing and stolen. But it was also crucial. The familiar phrase, "the needs must as the devil drives," was spoken at the outset. Lydia brought her 10-speed bike to a halt and leaned it against her favorite picnic table in Possum Park. The outdated purple bike never did have a working kickstand, which made Lydia grimace each time she parked it by leaning it anywhere. She had finished her mail route just in time to watch the League of Lady Gravediggers practice their softball skills. And she slung her empty mail bag carelessly onto the tabletop as she perched there to watch them. Another compelling aspect of arriving at this time was to see Mr. Darling, their coach, in his most casual apparel, being an ecru lace-up shirt with pinstripes and white flannel trousers that he tucked into his navy stockings. It was like seeing a different or third version of him. All 13 women were present and dotted around in groups of two or three, talking, stretching, pitching and catching, or unpacking their gear. I don't think I'll ever be a sports girl, Lydia thought as she drew her knees up to her chest and let her gaze fall to the clover-covered ground below. Just then, she saw something moving beneath the boards of the wooden seat of the picnic table. It was a rat, a large white rat. Lydia leaned over just in time to see the bright creature leap up unexpectedly onto her chunky Doc Martens boot. Anyone else would have screamed, but not Lydia. The sharp lines of her goth makeup softened as she smiled down at the creature. "Hey, little dude," she beamed, now seeing that the rat had a wee mailbag of his own. The quiet rodent reached into his canvas pouch and brought out a tightly folded triangular letter, sealed with a dot of rust-colored wax. He deftly turned the letter up at her with his tiny clawed hands, so as to show her the writing on its front. In old-style calligraphy, it read, "Miranda Merrick, The Midnight Library." Stepping quickly down the long, elegant hallway with high scarlet and black dappled walls, Della passed several eccentric paintings and black scrollwork sconces. The bright eternal candles radiating a fiery orange shimmer at regular intervals along the hall. The nervous maid stood outside the closed crimson door with an elegantly framed silhouette of a clawfoot tub centered on it. She could hear running water, low laughter, intermittent splashes, and the instant vaporization of water touched by hot coals. She furrowed her worried brow, straightened the white apron of her uniform, and raised a timid hand to knock upon the door. "Ma'am, I'm so sorry to interrupt your bath, but..." Miranda, reclining in a fine Nero Marquina, or black marble tub, pursed her lips and raised her head from her pillow, then gracefully lifted her leg to stop the red-colored water flowing from the tap, by turning the brass faucet handle downward with the ebony hoof of her foot. "Della, can it wait?" she appeasingly called out, as her small demon daughter tossed a glowing coal from her toy box into her mother's bathwater to watch the fizzy column of bubbling steam rise. "I believe it's a letter from Captain Magnus, ma'am," came the maid's hopeful reply. High and away in another realm, a young woman works away at her unending task of feeding cage after cage of birds, some quite large, some small, and all exotic and ethereal with long, wavy, gossamer-like plumage, and all uncommon on Earth. Each day, all day, she looks after the birds, never once counting them because they are too many in number to count. Without rest, without night, the woman cleans the cages, turns the eggs in their nests and lugs heavy bags of seed, buckets of water, and mountains of straw to care for the birds, day after day of the same day. Michelle has no desire to leave and doesn't even know that she can't. Her mind holds only confusion and regret. Each day, the cage doors swing open, and the birds fly out, soaring up into the perpetually blue sky, and over the palace wall in the far, far distance. Michelle watches them as they fly, knowing they will shortly return. In a tall stone turret at the back of the Midnight Library, in a six-sided room with three tall doors to enter it and three tall windows facing outward, Miranda nimbly lit six black candles, each in an ebony holder, sitting to the left of a hexagonal plate. Each jet china plate centered in its place upon a mahogany hexagonal table. Each china plate bearing a curious puck, a rough, dry cake, seemingly composed of mud, fur, and bones. Seating herself at the table, facing the doors with the center window behind her, she lifted the candle to her left and set the centerpiece bundle of rosemary, wormwood, and calendula alight. The edges of the herbs glowed hot, and their sweet smoke immediately rolled upward with purpose, scrolling into letters, ancient symbols, and outlines of animals and curling vines. She placed the creased letter beside her plate. Illuminated by the candles before her and the leaded glass windows behind her, Miranda unfocused her eyes on the rising smoke and spoke. "Come to me, my mothers. I summon you to my side." For a moment, the room lay quiet. Then one of the three doors to the many-cornered room unlatched and eased open. A woman who looked exactly identical to Miranda sailed into the room and raised her eyebrows at Miranda. "Hi, Mom." Miranda grinned as the matching woman squeezed her shoulders and kissed her hard on the cheek and took a seat beside her at the table. This was Miranda Senior. At least that's whom she was referred to as. She could be exceptionally dangerous if tested, especially where her daughter was concerned. A long-term, befuddling curse of bad luck, bad weather, bad dreams, and an unbroken turmoil of frustration, gloom, and confusion, she would visit upon those who overstepped their boundaries. Miranda Senior did have a name of her own, but no one seemed to ever speak it. And she was indeed Miranda's mother, but due to the arcane circumstances of the creation of Miranda, the pair were indistinguishable from each other and may as well be twins. Nearly. Those closest to the mother and daughter could quickly tell them apart. Mostly. This woman's magic procured and cared for the books. A polite tap came simultaneously as the same door was opened again. The crystal doorknob was gently returned to its resting point by a taller, dour-looking woman with neatly upswept, lightly graying hair, held in place with abalone combs. As she moved, the light scent of cottonwood smoke flowed around the room. In bleak, buttoned-up Victorian garb from head to toe, she tilted her chin and gave an open expression to the matching women that silently conveyed that she commanded respect and authority. This was Margaret, Miranda's quite capable grandmother. To say that Margaret didn't suffer fools gladly was an understatement. Although she rarely employed it, she possessed the deadly power of being able to shapeshift faster than time itself into any god-awful flaming hell beast from Hades. She was particularly hard on silly thrill-seekers, witch-teasers, and ghost-hunters, killing them by fright instantly. She made it so that they found much more than what they were seeking, but they never lived to tell about it. It was much of Margaret's magic that held the spellbound library steadfast in its place, kept the structure sound, and even the inhabitants strong. Margaret's no-nonsense magic kept order and efficiency. Stefan halted his horse, breathed in the sunshine-scented air, and untied the paisley blue handkerchief from his damp neck. He wiped the trickling sweat from his brow with it as he squinted skyward, his muted gaze following the enormous flock of dreamy birds passing overhead. Dismounting from his dappled mare, he patted her neck and led her off to the side of the high wooden doors of the palace walls. Taking a golden key from his pocket, he turned it inside the keyhole of the ornate escutcheon plate. Silently, one of the great pair of doors swung open. As it did so, a shining being peering down from the top of the wall gave a solemn wave by only tilting its bright palm. Stefan smiled and gave a polite wave in return. Another shining being appeared in front of Stefan and moved just enough beyond the massive door, just far enough to hand Stefan a piece of parchment with a list of a few names written upon it. When Stefan had his list in hand, the lucent being moved back inside and the massive door swung closed. The bright one perched upon the wall sent an unspoken message to Stefan. In his mind, the soft-voiced message spoke, "You may enter to join us." Stefan nodded knowingly at the being, but didn't take the offer. He hoisted himself up onto his horse and rode away. Miranda, Miranda Sr., and Margaret sat staring at the symbols and signs appearing in the smoke that gradually revealed or hinted to them possible outcomes of what the future held. When a handsome man in a cowboy hat momentarily appeared in the smoke, Miranda Sr. smirked and nudged Miranda with her elbow.
"Stop it, you two!"
came the stern warning from Margaret. Another door of the six-sided room opened, and in strolled May, mother of Margaret. Impossibly beautiful May, with her sparkling ebony eyes and ruby lips, she glided to her seat, her snug gray lace gown trailing behind her. May, Miranda's great-grandmother, looked like the slightly older sister of Miranda and Miranda Sr., even though she was by birth the oldest witch presently in the hex-shaped room. May took her seat at the table beside her austere daughter Margaret, smiled with her perfect Cupid's bow lips, and winked at her. Margaret pursed her dry lips, did a slow blink, and shook her head with reproof as her comically disapproving eyes scanned the other three witches. Long ago, when the villagers dragged May atop the wood-laden heap that would become her live funeral pyre and lit the cottonwood branches at her feet, she seemed to grow more beautiful in the flames, causing even the most devout witch-haters to weep. Just before she perished in the fire, she gave birth to Margaret in the smoke and flames. After she was burned, her ashes were carefully swept up and used in a powerful spell, conducted by her mother and her grandmother. Far below in the jagged caves on the grounds where the library was eventually built. This powerful spell brought May back to life. May's beauty was the magic that was present in every lavish ornamental thing that charmed the eye in the Midnight Library. From the romantic swirls in the architecture to the hypnotizing gleam in the crystals dangling from the chandeliers, if it was irresistibly pleasing, it was powered by May's magic. It would be. Generous pinches of her ashes were mixed into the mortar and bricks that built the underground channels and formed the library's foundation. A bit more was sparingly sprinkled into the gaps of the fine floorboards and dusted into the damp paste that affixed the lush wallpapers in their place. Now, I'm so very pleased to tell you, spooky lovelies, that over our brief downtime between seasons, there's a never-before event being held in our Patreon. Over the next few weeks, I will be giving away books from my own private collection as prizes to win by our paid patrons from anywhere at any level. The books being given away range from the popular to the obscure. Each book will arrive with an official Midnight Library bookplate and bookmark, and it will be signed from me to you. I love the idea of my books finding new homes with folks like you, who will love them as I have, and not be bothered at all when the ghostly voices that inhabit them speak to you from your bookshelves. When you join our Patreon at the $5 level or above, you will have access to the newly published long story of Stephen Strangeways and all of our early and ad-free readings a week earlier than the public. Even more perks are available at the higher tiers. And it's true, I'll be happy to greet you there. please visit our Overflowing with Strange Goodies Patreon at patreon.com/midnightlibrary. The Midnight Library would like to thank everyone at Astonishing Legends. Our excellent sound design is by Chris at Sounds Like an Earful. And our fabulously weird merch can be found at redbubble.com/people/midnightlibrary. Thank you, Spooky Lovelies.